Hello, Kevin.
Hello, am I on mute? No. Hello, Ann. How are you?
I'm doing well. Rocky is not. She's in a mood.
Ah, well, you know.
Hey, Chuck.
Hey.
You want the whiskey?
No, nobody wants the whiskey. She doesn't want me.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, Irma.
Hi. Who's that?
Not
Ed.
It's Rocky.
Rocky. Here, this is Charlie.
Look, Rocky.
Oh.
Hey. Say hi. Hi.
Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
We're definitely waiting for folks. Kevin, I'm going to make you the co-host since you're facilitating the meeting, and that will let you see if anyone decides to use the hand raise function. Make co-host and done. Okay, let's see. Who do we got here? We got some co-chairs. Check. We got a council affairs man. Check. Got a individual from membership. Check. So we're just waiting for and we have now received our community engagement representative. Because quorum is determined differently for steering, based on representation of committees and co-chairs, we are now at quorum. So I'll go ahead and share the agenda. All right, you all see that? Yes, take that as a yes. Silent majority. Look, so quiet. Why are you all so quiet? Oh, because you're all muted. Did I mute you?
I know. No, I was mute. Sorry.
I'm like, have I really stepped in it somehow? Is there a very personal conversation that's happened before I came on board? All right, so if you want to start the meeting, Kevin, we do have, even though only a small number, we do actually have quorum.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. So we're called to order. It is 3:04. Let's see, Mark, do they have do we have access to the agenda?
Yeah, oh, I put it up. So if you want to just do introductions, ask everyone to introduce themselves.
Okay. Ed, want to introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Ed Rocky here.
Chuck?
Chuck Adams, Council of Affairs.
Emma?
Emma Peretta with the Council Co-Chair, sorry.
David?
David Gonzalez, Community Co-Chair.
Mark?
Mark Molnar, Council Staff.
Melina?
Melina Quirk, Council Staff.
And Ben?
Hi there, Ben, Community Engagement.
Thank you for prodding me along, Mark. I'm a total novice at this. So we need to review and approve of the draft minutes.
Draft agenda?
We need to approve the agenda. Ah, there it is. Okay. Without objection, we can do that by consensus. Now let's move to the minutes.
All right. Let me share that just a moment.
So while you're doing that, maybe Ken could introduce himself.
Thank you. My name is Ken Pierce. I'm a member at large.
So we see here on the first page just our regular agenda items. Moving on, we have our CHEP and HHS update. Then moving on, our committee and work group reports. And then the review of the HCV. And done.
Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? I see none. So without objection, we can approve that by consensus. We could.
So next would be announcements and then public comment.
Are there announcements? No announcements, none at all. Okay, well, then is there any public comment? That's next, right?
Correct.
So I don't see any public here, and no one is going to be representing the public. No one purports to represent the public.
Next we have the CHEP and then HHS updates.
I don't see Thomas.
No Thomas.
That's maybe he'll show up. I don't know. I do have just a couple announcements, nothing major. I mean the topic of the day is of course the carry forward, but there is just a whole lot of conditions of awards that are due and in last month and this month. And it's just a tremendous administrative burden right now. There are 16 different budget analyses, reports and various electronic things due in 30 days for Part A MAI. Then there's Part A COVID. Then there's in the epidemic money and Part C. Additional funding is wonderful. It's awesome, but it does come up with a price with a certain administrative burden. We've also been asked by HRSA to present next week on best practices related to COVID, the COVID pandemic, and the next HRSA monthly grantee webinar. And this is, of course, an honor. We were glad to be recognized, but in reality, it's also more work. I thought you might be interested in knowing that. And I think that's about it, other than the carry forward, which we will talk about in a moment.
Anybody next up. Next are the committee reports.
I'm going to have to pull up the agenda. Okay. I thought I downloaded them.
That's okay. We can do community engagement first.
Community engagement. Who can speak for that?
I'm so sorry. I was super late to the community engagement meeting, so I missed most of it. I think I was only there for like 15 minutes, so I was wondering if anybody else was there, if they remember what we talked about.
I was there. I know we talked about the carry forward. I think that was the first committee, right, that we talked with about that. That's about all I remember. Mark, can you help me with that? We did the needs assessment, right?
And yes.
And
we definitely did that. And there was talk on community on the COLAs. I'm sorry. I think I stepped out and maybe made myself a lunch at that point.
Well, there was some general discussion, I think, about the methodology, what the pressing adaptation, let's put it that way, that Dave is undergoing. And he's putting forth a valiant effort, I think. He's trying to adapt. And obviously, there's not going to be any person-to-person interaction. And this is kind of new for a needs assessment, as I understand it. And the topics have changed from transitional age youth to, we were going to do the Latin, the Portuguese-speaking positive folks. Some work has been done preparing that. So that's going to be, I guess, the primary focus, as well as what's the other population?
So the target needs assessment itself remains youth, and I think for the COLAs it will be Portuguese speaking, and maybe Melina can help me out here. Is there a second one as well?
I actually think it was those two. I think it was just those two. Okay.
But there is a difference. So the Portuguese speaking one will be one focus group. Actually, I think it's the one that's led by Ney in his position. And youth is more of the broader needs assessment.
The upshot is the Latinx population is considered just too large to try to undertake this year. And they're going to try to do it next year, right? What's the next committee? Council Affairs?
Oh, I'm sorry, but Melina, did you have something that you wanted to add to that? Was there any other thing that I missed for community engagement?
No. I think that the Portuguese-speaking COLA, I think we're going to do over as a survey. We just talked about trying to do the logistics of running a group of 20 to 30 people over Zoom with live translation. Seemed really not doable. So we're working on a survey that Ney offered to send out to the people in his group.
Thank you. And before you move on, Kevin, Ken has his hand up.
Let's see. How do I see that? Oh, I see. Okay.
Maybe you just want to move on. It was a question about the best practices. So you've already moved on.
Well, actually, I noticed Bill has arrived. He can probably field that question. Bill, so, I was sharing that HRSA has asked us to present on best practices for the COVID, and Ken is asking what would those best practices be, for example?
No, that was not my question. My question was, how is that much different than best practices for any immune compromised group? So you had made a note that it's nice that they ask us to do that, but it's more work. And I just am curious whether that isn't pretty much already there. It's just a matter of us putting it on paper or something.
I guess I still don't understand your point, but maybe Bill does understand.
Can anybody else?
So would you like me to talk a little bit about what we're thinking about presenting about? Would that help?
I feel like I'm hearing from Ken, is there a difference between best practices right now around coronavirus as from just best practices in general with other diagnoses. Is that correct, Ken?
Yeah, I'm saying for all immunosuppressed groups, which HIV is one, is there any real difference for the us as HIV versus any of the others that we already have from CDC and health department, et cetera? I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of how much work this is.
I think I get it. It's not that much work. And so at least from my conversations with Dr. Monica Gandhi over positive health practice, both in terms of lethality and rates of infection, we're not seeing significant differences between positive and negative folks. Is that the question you're asking? Is that answering the question you're asking?
That answers the question, and also give me a sense of the direction.
What is different, Ken, is, I think, Ken, I think what Hirst has asked, at least what we're understanding, is, you know, how do you support people, keep them engaged in care, keep them on their meds, keep them virologically suppressed when you actually have a contagious disease as opposed to an infectious one? So, you know, what is it that we're doing to support people as we shelter in place? So I think that's the best practices they're looking at.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions on that? Can we go on to Council Affairs?
Sure, I can do that. We talked a lot about the carry forward funding, which we're going to talk about. And then the other thing we did was the pop-up clinic, went through the presentation they're going to give, and it was quite interesting and to the point. So those are the main two things. And we went through the work plan and discussed the date for the summit. And that's what we did.
So a couple things I'd like to add to that. First of all, Liz conveys her apologies. She really did mean to come to the meeting, but just got the day wrong. So I forwarded her the comments from the group to her, and she's happy to receive them. And the other thing, and this will probably require a motion from you, Chuck, is that the group recommended a summit date contingent on information from Kevin or Bill or Dean about when the prioritization and resource allocation scenarios were actually due to HRSA. And so they recommended, but there was no motion because it wasn't on the agenda, that the date be the same date that would occur normally that month if there were a full council meeting. So that would be Monday, the 28th of September. Before any motions happen, have you discovered any challenges, Kevin, around that being a date?
No, I shared that with Dean today. And I guess for Bill's benefit, this is going to be at a regularly scheduled full planning council meeting, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
We'll try to keep it at 2 hours. It might go a little bit over. The main presentation that will occur, besides the minor presentation of my HRSA mandate overview, would be the survey summary sheets from Dean and John Ainsley, I assume, and perhaps an EPI presentation, if EPI is actually able to provide that. I'm not sure if they are. ARIES certainly can't until the winter. I'm not sure if that would also impact EPI. If that's the case, you know, what we'll do is Melina will just send out the EPI and ARIES data from last year for folks to contemplate. So all that said, if there can be a motion from someone to move that be the date of
I'll put a motion out that September 28th be the date for the summit.
So we have, there's no time that on that motion?
At the regular scheduled meeting time.
Okay.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
So it's been moved and seconded. Is there a discussion?
Yeah, I just wondered, so we're going to do it in an hour and a half
No, it'll be a minimum of 2 hours, and it might go. We might want to schedule it for three. People's focus does tend, people do tend to lose focus after 2 hours, sometimes before. So we want to try to keep it as close to 2 hours as possible. And if need be, we can schedule, like, say, a training meeting via Zoom prior to that, if it turns out that we can get an EPI report in addition to the service summary sheets to keep the 2 hours.
So 3 to 5.
I think full council is 4 to 6. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
No. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. No more discussion.
Mark, just to make sure I understood you correctly, or maybe a point of clarification for the EPIC data, of course, doesn't rely on the ARIES data. No. They are having changes of staff, and a lot of their staff is being pulled over for COVID-19 response, but exactly. They should be de-linked. My suggestion would be ask them for the data, but maybe give them more lead time. Okay.
Oh, I'll ask them this week then. Who would you suggest that I go to now that my usual people are no longer with EPI?
I'm going to owe you that name. I knew you were going to ask, but I will check an email and get to you either tomorrow or Monday.
Yeah,
I have to go look and see who got assigned to do what.
I think Susan might have
been. I'm making a note
at some point, but yeah, I don't know. Okay, yeah, please send me that contact.
Okay,
thank you.
You got it.
So we have a motion that's been seconded. Is there any further discussion? How do we go about voting, Mark?
Any opposed?
Any opposed? How's that? See no opposition. We can do that by consensus. It's approved. Let's see. We have to go to membership then, right? Membership.
Right. All right. Membership. We discussed the carry forward. Reviewed renewal letter for TJ. We have two outstanding members. That we're waiting for the actual forms from, and they are Cecily and Charles. We had one resignation, John Bright. We interviewed Derek Mapp and have are forwarding his name and membership to the full council for a vote. We also are continuing to discuss our parking lot issue of representation within certain community groups. In other words, are some groups having greater representation or more than they should? And I think that's pretty much it. Any questions?
Don't see any questions. So I believe, are we ready to go on to the carry forward?
Sure. Would you like me to share screen on that one, Kevin?
Let's see. Yes, please.
No worries. Find that. And we go. There we are. All right. Shared. The preamble being that this is a motion that's on the floor coming from the most recent committee, Council Affairs. Was approved by each committee with actually no changes. Certainly some discussion, particularly in the first committee. After review of this will then go to the full council Monday after next. Take it away, Kevin.
Okay, so unexpended and available for regular Part A funds, just under $350,000, and then right around $60,000 for unexpended MAI funds. So the couple of things to keep in mind with carry forward funding. Most of you know this, but the funding term is quite brief. It's about 5 months or so. We generally expect, we generally hear about approval around October. Those funds need to be fully expended by the end of February. So 5 months or less. These are one-time funds, not really to be used for ongoing expenses. And for all practical purposes, it really needs to be directed toward items that have existing HHS contracts. No new positions, realistically no new services. Comparatively small amount of funding. So we've allocated around four broad areas. We're suggesting emergency financial assistance grants. $80,000 for the increased needs posed by COVID-19, and $20,000 directed specifically for senior clients, as was suggested in last year's needs assessment. So EFA grants, as you know, are payments to third-party providers, housing, utilities, medical, other services. So very basic living expenses and of course eviction prevention for Ryan Light eligible clients, and including a lot of newly unemployed folks. This allocation will directly expand the number of grants available to clients without adding any program or admin cost. We're addressing food insecurity with carry forward dollars. This is a significant need during the COVID emergency, as well as an ongoing need for Ryan White clients. We allocate just under 30,000, increasing the number of meals available, but also we hope to expand somehow the food delivery. Third, client incentive vouchers. Most years we are able to direct unexpended admin funds to these vouchers, but this year I think we had about a third of what is usually available. And of course the client request for these vouchers is quite high right now. We are exploring also the use of DoorDash, because one of the chief problems isn't the amount of food, it's getting the food to the people, because clients have lost so much mobility. They just can't venture out of the house. Finally, we are suggesting that we place in reserve some of these carry forward dollars, $170,000 in regular Part A and $30,000 in MAI for what we think will be increased needs in the fall with a potential second wave of COVID. We of course will maintain in contact with the Planning Council on identified needs. I mean, this will be a two-way thing. It's not uncommon that we discover what the needs are by Planning Council telling us. Almost by definition, you don't know what the needs are if you have sort of a rainy day fund. We would expect, you know, increased need for food, emergency financial assistance, and, you know, possibly psychosocial needs could be a commanding issue in the months ahead. But we'll just have to wait and see what the next few months bring. That is basically our recommendation, and I would be happy to respond to any questions.
Looks like Ken has his hand up.
Yeah, mine is kind of a two-part question, and it's anecdotal from myself, but will money help us in getting better access to COVID-19 rapid tests? So the issue for me is I've been having a series of surgeries on my eyes, and I have to have a rapid COVID test within 7 days, and yet the backlog, so I do my tests and then they don't come back within 7 days, so they have to cancel the surgeries. and try it again. So the only way to do it is to get a rapid test, because it has to be 7 days, within 7 days prior to the surgery. And just trying to find rapid tests in the city, or who's doing it, and if, you know, you have to be part of, there's just so much difficulty locating. I found it, but it just seemed like I know my ability to ferret out and tenaciousness is not the same for most, for many other HIV positive clients who may be in the same situation. And I'm just wondering, is money something that can help access rapid tests? And if so, do we want to put that note in, or somehow noting for rapid testing versus testing?
So I think, first of all, I repeat myself that this money really doesn't go very far in the end. The way we're doing this is we are building in a lot of flexibility in our description of unexpended dollars and what the carry forward will be going toward. I don't think there is much reason to encourage the belief that we could use these dollars to expand testing to any measurable degree. I think we have pressing needs in, you know, emergency financial assistance and housing and food insecurity. I just don't see, I don't know, is Bill still on the line? He may want to add something.
Sure. If I were smart enough to figure out how to raise my hand, I could have raised it. But so Ken, Kevin is right. The issue isn't enough testing. It's the processing the tests in the labs. And so they use two algorithms, one who qualifies for the testing, and the second is how fast your sample gets run if the labs are overrun. And so, you know, I think if we were seeing like necessary surgeries for people that were HIV positive were being postponed and canceled, we definitely want to address that probably as a policy issue, not a funding issue. My guess is because I'm assuming here, I may be wrong, but for elective surgeries, you know, it gets prioritized in a different way. And I'm sure your problem is being looked at as a system-wide thing, because you also just jack up a system to keep canceling surgeries. I wonder, you know, at what point, and we should continue to visit, if home testing gets better in terms of accuracy, if that's maybe something in the fall that makes sense to look at, if that's something that's not funded or needs additional support.
Mm. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost incomprehensible at this point in the epidemic. It is still so difficult to get a test. I think that obviously, if you're going to take a week or more to get a result, that has profound impact on contact tracing, which is, that's a whole different issue. But I feel your pain, Ken.
Well, and I would say there's all kinds of reasons, and I knew that it was a backup in the lab. I just didn't know whether money was in any way could help that process. And it sounds like it's not about money.
No, I don't think so, Ken. You know, there's two things. One is the volume a test can run and the number of testers that you have. But I think we could look at it. But again, it would be hiring more staff if it's the latter. We don't have the kind of money to build bigger labs, but it would be hiring more staff if it's the latter. And this, of course, this fund wouldn't work for that because it would have to be more longitudinal.
Yeah, except so for me, I ended up paying for a second test within 7 days, and I went through Dignity Health. And in order to do that, I had to go to Dignity Health doctors. I could not get my physician, and that would be true of any Orion White Care patient. Unless they were with Dignity Health, they could not get the rapid test, but they have plenty of rapid tests. So it's simply a question of, right, if you're Ryan White, then you would have to have some agreement that Ryan White would pick up the cost of you going to a physician outside of our network who would then say, okay, we'll do the rapid test for them. And in which case there's no problem getting it at all. So it's more about how this whole system is working within the city, and then the inequities and understanding how it is that we cannot have test or backup test on one hand, but we can on the other hand. And, you know, do we buy into that by paying dollars, which is, I feel, a little bit like the blackmail of Dignity Health has it. And Dignity Health has it because they were issued the tests somehow based on them having hospitals throughout the U.S. and they were given them out, and then they can decide where they want to put it, and they put it through their urgent care centers. But one way or the other, it just seems to me sometimes there are other ways for us to get at problems. And yes, elective surgery, I understand, but sometimes what others perceive as elective is a huge quality of life. I mean,
I mean, the needs posed. Go ahead, Bill.
It does seem to me maybe this is something, if the planning council is just interested to hear about, and we should have some kind of regular reporting on, you know, return time for tests. My sense is that there's been a huge uptick in testing. Because I know all the alternative testing sites in deep, they've made them an all walk-in and all free. And so I just have the feeling the labs, you may just be hitting a moment as the ramp up happens, Ken. So for me, it'd be interesting to see if it's still the case 3 weeks from now or 4 weeks from now, because I do know that at least in DPH, the amount of testing going on is like doubled and trebled in the clinics.
Yeah, the anecdotal here is my test 2 weeks ago has not come back yet.
Yeah, and I was saying on NPR, that's not so uncommon.
But the whole point is, by the time your test comes back, it's already pointless because you've been through a period of isolation. I mean, that they would have you isolate for anyway if you're positive,
right?
And there's no contact tracing either. So, and correct, you know, and no surgeries will occur unless you have it done within a shorter period of time. So the implications in all this go beyond just us, but mm-hmm. You know, if there is an answer, it's just, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I understand.
Mm. Well, thank you for raising the issue, Ken. I mean, I'm sure everybody's heard, we're already hearing about being on the verge of another crisis of PPE shortages as well. So, let's see. This comes to us from Council Affairs, right?
Correct. So,
do we have a motion on the carry forward?
It's on the floor already, coming from committee. Okay. If there's no more discussion, I don't see any hands. We can go to a roll call vote because, of course, this doesn't.
Can I just ask for clarification on the first one for senior clients? Did the group determine the age for senior?
The group did not.
Okay.
Did the needs assessment indicate a bracket?
I think 55 plus.
Yeah.
Give me the chills.
I think that would be our sort of default, unless there is.
Oh, Dave. Dave, what is the parameters for the seniors during the needs assessment? Hi, Dave.
Oh, is Dave here?
Yeah, just saw his face down there, but maybe he's only here in image only. Okay.
I'm here. I just was unmuting. I was listening, but I was on a different screen. I'd have to go back and look at the minutes to confirm, but I actually think it might have been 60 plus. No, Mark. Actually, I think it was 55 plus. If I recall, because we did go back and forth on this for an extended period of time, and I think 55 was where we settled. So,
okay.
Hope that answers your question.
If there's no more discussion, I'll go to the roll. Sorry.
It was 50 plus. Sorry. Oh,
50 plus.
50 plus.
Wow. Okay. Thanks, Melina. And
yeah, thank you.
Some of you did not know you were seniors are now seniors.
Oh my lord.
Congratulations. You
I
made
thought
it.
I was a baby, you know.
Very distressing. Okay. Well, with that.
Well, the good thing is a very inclusive survey. I got 60% of everyone down.
Yeah, and I hope we will keep the statistics of age in that, because I think there's a huge difference between, even within the realm of HIV, between 50 and 60 and 70 and up, as we're seeing with COVID. So,
all right, if there's no more discussion, I'll go to a roll call vote. If you could all unmute. Bill. Oh, sorry, the motion before you is what you see on the shared screen to approve these four categories for carry forward distribution. Bill Bloom.
Yes.
Ken Pierce.
Yes.
David Gonzalez.
Yes.
Ben Cabangan.
Yes.
Irma Parada.
Yes.
Chuck Adams.
Yes.
Ed Chitty.
Yes.
And Kevin Croft.
Yes.
Motion carries. We'll now go to full council. And it looks like the next agenda item is another vote. And this is on our annual update of eligibility criteria, as well as the severe need and special populations definitions. I will share a screen on that. And then I'll quickly review. So this is updated annually per the annually adjusted federal poverty level. This also takes into consideration the council agreeing with the HHS recommendation to raise the roof to 500% from 400% to parallel what's happening with Part B funds. And so you'll see under eligibility criteria, this is the same as the last year, with the difference being it now reads in that last bullet point in the top box, it's now 500% of FPL, which equals $63,800 for one person. So moving forward, severe need definition is also the same, except with the change in FPL. Of course, as you all know, the severe need definition is used as eligibility criteria as well for our centers of excellence. And so the FPL for severe need is defined as actually more equal or less than 150%, which for one person it's 19,140, and for two people it's 25,860. And then the special populations definition is below that. I'll just read that out loud. It recognizes that special populations which have unique or disproportionate barriers to care, they need additional unique services or require a special level of expertise to maintain them in care. Following populations were identified. Populations with the lowest rates of viral suppression who experience health disparities. Communities with linguistic or cultural barriers to care. Individuals who are being released from incarceration or who have a recent criminal justice history, and persons living with HIV age 60 years or older. So this is the updated eligibility criteria and definitions for severe need and special POPs. Is there a motion to approve this updated definition?
So moved.
Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
Chuck, seconds, thank you. Any discussion? Oh, look at that cute dog. I want to discuss that. Oh,
I second that.
Second that cute dog. Your parrot's very cute too, Ed. Any discussion on this updated criteria? All right, this will also be a roll call vote. Let me stop share so I can see all of your lovely faces or the image of your lovely
faces. And Charlie.
And Charlie. Oh, wow. Charlie. Kevin Hunchcroft.
Yes.
Ed Chitty.
Yes.
Chuck Adams.
Yes.
Irma Parada.
Yes.
Ben Kabangan.
Yes.
Bill Bloom.
Yes.
David Gonzalez.
Yes.
Ken Pierce.
Yes.
Motion carries, and I'll send that to you, Melina, after this meeting. All right. Let me see what's else on the agenda if you don't have it.
Just the next meeting.
Oh, next meeting. Okay. Yeah. I have not put together the agenda for the next meeting. There is a week before that, and I wanted to hear back from Liz about when she'd be able to appear at the meeting. So once I have that information, I will send that out to the co-chairs. I also wanted to introduce an idea that wasn't on the agenda, but it doesn't really require any movement. So I wanted to just bring it up now. The co-chairs have suggested that this group be a review group for the CHIP EH that Shelley Facente and Hannah Heward are developing. So if I'll be presenting that idea to Hannah and the other person. And I just wanted to make sure that's okay with you, that you will be receiving, they agree, that you will be receiving that to take a look at prior to our August meeting in which it will be voted on. I have mentioned that they did want the council to be an active party in reviewing this plan. And so that's why the co-chairs felt it would be best that the leadership committee be that group. Does anyone have any reservations? All right, so seeing none, I'll contact Shelley and Hannah and ask them to see you all as partners, really, and to send what they would like to be reviewed to you. And I'll make sure to either give them your email addresses or have them just send it to me and I'll email. Did you have a question about that?
No, my question was about when we were having face-to-face meetings, we always had that feedback assessment tool at the end of the meeting from those that attended. Are we doing that with the Zoom meetings?
No, we are not. But you know what? There is actually, I think there's, obviously there's a poll function that could be turned into an evaluation. In addition?
I feel like, you know, that getting some feedback from the members on what they're finding difficult or not difficult in attending or participating or whatever, you know, we shouldn't just draw conclusions of our own. We should see what the membership is saying. So, and this group would be the group that would be looking at that, I'm assuming. So if there's some way to set something up for Monday, I think it would be good, even if it's emailing it out, you know, and asking people to respond.
Okay. Well, I'll first look at to see if there's any kind of easy just something easy that we can do via Zoom so that people can do it, you know, at the end of the meeting. If not, Ben just had a good suggestion that I'll probably follow up with him on. That could be emailed out, I assume, right, Ben? So I'll take a look at that. Thank you for that good suggestion, Ken, and we'll make that happen for the next meeting.
Thank you.
Good.
Okay.
Are we done?
I think so.
Okay, well, thank you for your attendance and attention, everyone. Adios.
Bye.
Ciao.
That's the best meeting. All right. Stop recording.